For me, living is just setting up his laptop. So we are going to allow Ukota which must go and still catch flight to present. We hope that your presentation will speak to that. That you've got flights to catch. So
no, the Congress of South African Students, the Black and White Army. Chairperson, I am with or accompanied by the Deputy Secretary General of COSAS, Comrade Kola Boy, and Honorable Kwenam Kiaye, translated in African, Crocodile Dog. So we are very much grateful to be with you here on this occasion. But Chairperson, I want to indicate first that we have a presentation which to some extent is incomplete, because when we're busy making conclusions, the salt which was added to our wounds yesterday when the right wing of South Africa finally found the victory, when a murderer in the form of Janusz Walus was given parole by our democracy. So that really and indeed distracted us from completing our presentation. But Chairperson, we would have really loved that when we do our presentation, we do it timelessly, to an extent that solidarity was supposed to be here. We wanted solidarity here because we know for a fact that every time or every opportunity solidarity gets, they quickly rush to court to defend themselves for practicing racism. We also wanted to caution them that that which they were doing in Gauteng previously, that of taking the department every time, every now and then to court. But we're, Chairperson, please protect me. Chairperson, you see, this one is a member of parliament. She continues to defend herself from racism.
Wait, it's a point of order. Indeed, let's hear.
Jay, first of all, when we started this process as members of parliament on legislation, you submit, and you have a full right from any organization to submit any input, and we invited you as a committee from parliament. Can you put your phone down, please? We do not take videos in committee meetings.
Chairperson, this meeting is run by you. I'm not going to be instructed by this woman when to do what at what time.
Can you stop
the chairperson is going to tell me what to do in this meeting. Not you. Please.
I'll finish. So first of all, you are here on our invitation to do a presentation to the Basic Education Committee on the Bela Bill. You are not here to talk politics that was in a court yesterday, and you are not here to offend or attack any other presentation or presenters. So can we note that we have just 3:10 received the presentation, which should have been with us prior to arriving here, because members of parliament actually come well prepared to meetings. And can we note that in our discussions and in our minutes that this was not done? And can they go directly to their presentation, and no politics. This is not a school, this is not a COSAF meeting, this is a meeting of parliament.
This person is giving a speech, it's not a point of order, it's misdirected, not guided by anything. Here we are going to speak, I mean the Bella Bill on its own is politics. The Bella Bill is guided by the politics of what happens in our schools. So when we speak about Christiani here, we are speaking about a person who stood firmly for education in South Africa. So if she is offended when we speak about Christiani, that is her own baby to feed. And this meeting is a meeting which is supposed to be chaired by herself. And she is only a member of parliament. She cannot come and tell us when we have submitted a presentation, because we have got people who are dealing directly with in relation. Yes, ma'am. Yes, Chair. Yeah. No, but Chair, this thing is lost. Oh, okay. No, thanks, Chair. Can you please enlighten it a bit, because I've got an eye problem. People will be... Yes. So, Chair... Yeah, thanks once more, Chair. I think we are not here for individuals. We are here to present the Bella Bill. Remember, we have got a constituency of over 13 million learners over the country. So we are not going to be intimidated by anyone here. Chairperson, our intention, of course, was the fact that, and it's still the fact that when people leave this house today, after our presence, they must have turned pink in their skin. So, thanks, Chairperson. The introduction thereof... who can turn pink here? It's called out, can turn pink. Do you turn pink when you're given from the Chairperson? Not that one comes the opportunity to make submission on the amendment in response to the shifting education context in the Bella Bill. COSAS supports those amendments that recognize challenges in the system and provide opportunities to mitigate those challenges. At the same time, we noted that while some clauses address one problem, it may also open door to creating new problems. Submissions were made in the past, and although some of these have been incorporated into the bill, some were omitted. It is indeed... It is in this light that COSAS reviewed and presented comments and recommendations below. The first one, Comrade Chairperson of the session, will be... it is clause 1, amendment 1 of section 1. It is a definition for basic education has been inserted to clarify that basic education refers to grade R to grade 12, or from grade R to grade 12. This was necessary in order to clarify the fact that basic education continues until the end of grade 12, even though a learner who has completed grade 9 is no longer subject to compulsory school attendance. And then we supported the bill, of course, but the recommendation which we have made is that learners who fail grade 9 twice should be recommended for TVET college. And this program must start with John Steinhausen of DA, so that is able to go and complete his matric. The second one, Chair. But Chairperson, this woman is out of order.
Chairperson.
But it's true, Chair. John Steinhausen does not have matric. And he's a leader in our society. We are creating a bill which is likely to assist him as a person, as an individual.
Chairperson.
Chairperson, point of order.
I should leave.
We should leave.
When?
Leave who? This is South Africa, so please, you can leave. You can go and you.
You can leave.
We'll
represent
our...
We'll listen to you when you are presenting.
You
don't want to listen to us.
Why? You have listened to your right wingers here for hours and asked for 2 minutes.
You can't say you must leave.
Why
are you to say we must leave here?
Jefferson.
We can't leave.
Jefferson. And you must stop disrupting us when we speak here. We're not here for you, okay?
Yeah, I think you must call security. That's probably the best of
me. I'm this woman. I'm this woman, chef. Chair, you're calling security on this woman because she's being disruptive here. Yeah.
We're agreeing for you to call
She's being disruptive here.
Yeah. Can you continue,
Chair?
We're not going to be intimidated by a white woman here.
Thank you.
Okay.
If you guys are prepared,
you
are
not. No, we're very prepared. Oh, thank you, Chair of the session. Can we please not be disturbing very much? We are going to be short, as I've already stated that we are rushing for our flights. Some of the bills that are here we have supported, and most of them we really don't have recommendations for them. But we are going. I'm going to speak on the clause of that talks about drugs. Yes, we support the clause simply because it is a clause that protects learners from a substance abuse. But we also asking that can it further be extended that teachers do not also smoke cigarettes in school premises. Simply because when you enter school premises, there's that sign of cigarettes that is crushed there. It does not mean that only learners are not supposed to smoke cigarettes, even those that are employed by the department should not be smoking in the school premises. They can smoke in their homes, in their comfortable spaces. And another thing that we're going to speak about, it is the issue of the alcohol bill. The alcohol bill, I don't think we really need to spend time on this one. Maybe a lot of people are actually defending the bill because they're employed by Parliament, and when you walk down the corridors of Parliament, we find the bar. In our schools, we are not interested in that. And furthermore, if people want to do programs and fundraising and all these other things to make money, they must sell T-shirts. Alumni can buy Powerade, Energy, because we're supporting sports, energy boosters, and all of those things. As I move on, Chair, I am actually going to the ones that we have recommendations.
There is an agent for like that. No, he aspires to be Muslim imam. No, we're looking for the ones who have made it.
I've stated that we are looking for recommendations. I'm not going to speak on the clauses that we agree on. It's actually a waste of time. But rather, I will speak on the ones that we have recommendations for, simply because we're looking at time. And we've stated that we're rushing for our flight.
Unless Ms. Wehrman will put for
$21.12 is the recommendation. Let me just read it.
In 2.1.12,
we also have a recommendation. It's about the definition of loan is amended to allow public schools to deal with the day-to-day business of the school without obtaining the written approval of a member of the executive council, the MEC, and then the issue here is that what are these loan arrangements? This is a cause for concern. How often and for how long will a school operate on loans before it gets its act together? When continuous need for loans exists at schools, it may also indicate improper financial management at the school or insufficient funding of the school by the education department. And our recommendation thereof is that the provincial education department should institute due to diligence and procedures when it defects the continuous need or use of loans at a school. Yeah, so 2.1.13, we have rejected a proposal which the clause proposes the insertion of a definition for other financial benefit, which means any benefit of monetary nature, including an exemption from the payment of school fees in respect of the child of an employee. Yeah, that party theta in politics is a working class. You know, to say that the SGB and the school agreement should not be binding on learners. If a school is a non-fee paying school, it should remain as such. And from previous presentation, we have heard people who suffer so harshly from alcohol who want to propose the sale of alcohol in schools because they want to do it for the purpose of fundraising and whatsoever. In the same context, we reject and we do not wish to engage in a discussion which speaks about the sale of alcohol in a school premises, because we already know what alcohol does to our society. You know, when you are in a tavern, either you are old or you are young, the moment you get drunk, you start looking around for young girls. So you do not want the same situation where a teacher and a learner are drunk in the school and they start engaging in the adult. So that is part of the main reasons we say that alcohol sale for fundraising purposes should not be even be debated. Now, there's a clause which seeks to amend section 31, I mean 3, bracket 1 of the SASA to provide that school attendance is compulsory from grade R and no longer from grade 1. The clause further proposes to increase the penalty provision in section 3 of 6 of the SASA from 6 to 12 months in the case where the parent of a learner without just cause fails to ensure that a learner who is subject to compulsory attendance attends the school, or where any other person without just cause prevents such a learner from attending school. And then, of course, our observation there and there will be that the amendment to the SASA to provide that school attendance is compulsory from grade R is welcome, because we also believe in this transition from ECD, and we can't accept a situation where a child comes from grade crash and then they jump exactly to grade R. They need to be incorporated into the system through this grade R process. So the EEA must be amended in line with this amendment to ensure that the grade R teachers are employed in terms of the EEA, and that the provision is made in the PPN for grade R learners. In the same line, I want to believe that we're also dealing with the issue of unemployment, to say that there are people or qualified people who are seated at home, they are qualified for foundation-based education and they are unable to be employed because there is not a space specifically for them. So when we say that grade R now becomes compulsory, it means that they will then be able to be incorporated into the same space. Skip Nyana, we are not presenting everything. Skip Nyana, Chair. Yeah.
Okay, clause 28, amendment of section 36. The proposed amendment further reduces the burden on schools to apply for permission when entering into small lease agreement in regards to movable property. We are saying that the clause should be clarified. What is meant when we say when we speak of small leases? And I think that is where we're going to end. You can go through the presentation. Is going to be with you throughout. Another thing that I think we need to make an emphasis on, it is an issue of language. I really do not understand when those that were advantaged before, those that were previously disadvantaged, actually think that we are fighting over the issue of Afrikaans being a language. That is not the problem. We understand that Afrikaans is a language, an official language in South Africa, but all we're saying is that they should understand that material conditions dictate, yes, they were privileged, and that is reality. That is why we find ourselves in this space. If we really are on a moving train to transformation in the education sector, we should be able to analyze and be honest with ourselves that we are currently not equal, and as far as we're not equal, it's not going to be easy for us to champion what we want, especially if we are to continuously, when we're having engagements, people get emotional. I believe that we're all emotional. We've all been hurt, and we're not here to nurse each other's feelings. In that spirit here of trying to build a united nation, wanting to transform the education sector, and making sure that we all live in it, sikeni kamnandi sonke kungabikho ukuxabana kube khona ukuthula noxolo ekhaya. Siyabonga hlanga.
Let me allow members that you must take notes and then you respond.
Yeah.
It's Honorable Nadada, Osho.
Thanks, Chair, before I ask questions, I just want to get, there's a presenter, Mr. Tim Gwen. I don't know if it's any one of the learners there. I just wanted to get, are you guys, before I even start with my questions, I just want to check whether you are learners.
I'm not going to respond to that
question.
We're going to answer any question that I want to ask. Regarding this proposal,
the proposal, not opportunistic questions.
Chairperson,
move to the
question.
If you don't want to ask questions, just leave.
Language must be done at school is the government, which is the same principle, by the way, as the apartheid government, okay? That an HOD in a province will determine what language is used in a particular school. I'll give you a practical example. I went to any junior, senior, secondary school. I did my foundation phase there, where I understood depth of knowledge more than speaking good English like I do today. Oh, and okay. I'm going to this thing of, you are saying you're supporting the clauses that give the powers to HODs to determine or approve language policies, and I'm assuming admission policy. Then you've got a school that I recently did an oversight in Kumbu, where they wanted to study or use their language policy that would make them study all the subjects in its course. Similar school in Loding in Mpumalanga, not heard of the place. They wanted to study in Isindebele, right? They even got math and science labs built so that those learners can be able to study in Isindebele. And the parents there, similar case in Kumbu, similar case in Mpumalanga, wanted to study in their own mother tongue, right? But the department could not make that facility available because, one, there was a shortage of teachers. Number two, they do not have the necessary study equipment to make that available to those particular SGBs and those parents to make that particular provision available. Should we then not be empowering parents, our own parents, and the learners that choose to study their own mother tongue to determine what language must be used in school, rather than using an apartheid government system of having an HOD determining what language policy must be done in school? That's my first question to you. The second one is around compulsory grade R education. There's a concept that is done in the Seychelles, here in Africa, in Kenya, Finland, and various other countries, that the principle of making R compulsory is important. They even go as far as saying highly gifted learners can even start grade R at an earlier age. Highly gifted learners are 2% in the world, roughly highly gifted people, people that are intellectually advanced. They don't start from the top, but they, you know, innovate. Okay? Now, the question I have to you is that with grade R proposed that it must be made compulsory, and the minister responding to my question saying, well, technically we need 1.7 billion, but we don't have the funding for it. Have you explored what the constitutional implications of not being able to implement grade R when the department has legislated that? To say, grade R must be compulsory. The funding or the resources that are available in the fiscal can't realize this particular legislation. Do you know what the constitutional implications of that are? And you maybe have a solution to that, because that's a question that we've been asking all the stakeholders that have supported this particular law. The second last one, Chair, is around our legal team in Parliament spoke about earlier. And that is in relation to this the provisions around the alcohol in schools, in terms of school activities or whatever is deemed a school activity, right? We come from different environments, right? Where I come from, school activities or school events that happen in the classroom, because unfortunately we did not have, like Honorable Super referred to earlier, a campus boma or, you know, clubhouse or whatever the case may be, because the environments differ. But the principle still remains the same, that those that are responsible enough and have the facilities to be able to host such events must be given the space to, rather than legislating for the exception. The reality is that drugs, alcohol, behavioral problems are societal issues. And schools are a microcosm of society because they live in communities. However, you can't divorce the realities of what happens in society and what happens in actual schools.
And therefore, you must be able to make provisions that are differentiated, because communities are not the same. And would you then not say that, rather than saying that they have a blanket ban approach, we have a differentiated approach in dealing with this particular issue of how do you fundraise and so on and so on, so that you consider all communities that exist in this particular thing. Then, the last one, Chair, from my end, is it's important that when we do come to make representation, we do consultation. So, based on the proposals that you've made today, has there been any extensive consultation with your 13 million people that you represent as an organization to make sure that these particular amendments, they are aware of them? Because in many instances, the challenges that we have on the ground is that we make determinations for people without educating them and telling them what this is about and how it's going to impact their lives and how it's going to change their lives for the world. So those are the questions that I have, Chair, so far. But I have two follow-ups after I get those responses. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. There were some closures that I was interested in seeing what the commentary of COSAS is, but which I couldn't get to. So I'm just going to ask two questions. The one is, I think that we all agree that TVET colleges should be a preferred mode of place of education. If we refer twice unsuccessful grade 9 students to TVET colleges as a matter of course, don't we rather turn TVET colleges into a place where you don't want to be because you'll be regarded or perceived as a dropout? While, I mean, there are several vocations that people actually want to do, but they might not want to because they are afraid of the stigma of you're a TVET guy, you couldn't be successful at school. That is one thing I wanted to ask. And the other thing is, add up to what Mr. Narada said, I would like to know when are you feeling, and that's a personal question, I can't ask it for 13 million constituents, but when do you feel most empowered, when learning in English or learning in whatever mother tongue, because I believe maybe you don't, all three of you have the same mother tongue, I don't know. But what would, let's leave aside now the problem of are there sufficient teachers and do we have learning materials, but what would be your opinion on that? Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you very much to the presenters from COSAS. I saw the notice that you are commenting on, or you made your comment on, but I also want your views, as you have indicated that you have like 13 million members. And I will take it that is in all the provinces. What is your view with regards to the issue of undocumented learners? If you come across such cases where guys, there are learners who don't have documents and they are unable to get into the school, what is your role? How do you assist such learners? And secondly, it's on the issue of whether you also, in a way, do oversight of your own in schools regarding now on the issue of the migration of ECDs. it's one it's in your sources actually that now it has been made compulsory, and you made a good point of also it will also assist in the rate of unemployment that we have in our country when some of the graduates will be consumed in the system. But I would want to understand from your point of view on when you do visit schools or whatever process that you interact with your members at school level. How far is the preparation to check the migration process? How is it unfolding in schools? Whether is it done? Is it enough that has been done so far? And then what is it else that needs to be done to make sure that the migration is completed? And lastly, it's pertaining the teenage pregnancy that we encounter. It's a very sad story of, you know, young girls that, you know, have to become parents at a very young age. Are there any educational programs that you have as young people, as young representatives at the level of the schools, that you are also helping the department maybe to, you know, to assist and engage with young people in that regard? But lastly, Chair, I think now we have another, you know, angle. We can see how, you know, young people in our country, you know, are concerned with the what is happening in our country, you know, currently. And I think we must be matured enough, you know, to accommodate each and everyone as members of the committee, as and when they come to present, you know, as they've been doing for the past two or 3 weeks, and not be agitated by how they present themselves to the committee, because I believe we need to treat each and every other South African, any South African out there equally. That is my submission, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you very much for this opportunity. COSAS, we want to take this opportunity to appreciate the fact that you also registered yourselves so that you must come to this all-important portfolio committee for your voice to be heard. I have said in the past, Chairperson, that ours is a participatory democracy. And it must be a democracy wherein everybody is given a hearing, especially when such a person is available. Regrettable, of course, is that when we meet in this fashion, and even going forward, we'll still be here next week. You see, there was nowhere where presenters got workshopped what to do and what not to do. But I want to say thank you for your patience in managing the situation and then to this level. I only have got one question, Kosas, and my question is, you have made a remark about the language policy and how it is impacting on the education of our children in South Africa. You see, education, the life function of a school is all about teaching and learning. Of course, in accompaniment, there are many stakeholders. And you are no exception. You are one part such stakeholder. With regard to language, as you have already given your input, maybe you can go further and elaborate. How far do you think the language policy as applied in some schools is negatively impacting on the education of our children in South Africa. Thank you very much, sir.
Let us apologize for
making you to present late. And and as much as we are apologizing for making you to present late, I also think it's very necessary that we concur with Honorable Speaker that you must understand when you are in Parliament, we are having different political parties. I understand your situation. You are just coming from Kosas. So you deal with people at your age. We've been there. So that's why most of us are laughing too much. We understand. So here, you are dealing with different people, one, different characters, different political parties. And we need to try to be patient with one another. As I am allowing you to respond, I am requesting that you stick to the responses where they are responses. You stick only to those responses, and then we see how do we move forward. Who's going to speak?
Chair, we're going to assist each other in terms of answering questions. So the ones that have not been covered by the first speaker, which is Douglas Mobim, will be answered by Gwena. The ones that Gwena does not answer, I will close the session. Thank you very much, Chair.
No, thanks, Chair. And we wish to accept the fact that it's just work for the mother in this house. And she has tried to advise us there and there. And at least our timer is there. Chair, to some extent, when you speak of Africanism, it's something which we embrace. I don't know if Honorable Van der Merwe in a Van der Waal. They've got, hey, I get it now we use Africanism. I don't know if you have Africanism or what's going on. Okay. So maybe to you, I will just apologize a bit, but we will not apologize on not that. That we're not going to do. That we're not going to do, Chair, on the basis that this honorable member joined the politics very late. He joined politics very late because he cannot come in a question to say, who funds the Kosas? Where do you get your membership? If he joined the politics when it was not quite fashionable to do so, he would know that each and every school in South Africa is a Kosas base. If he joined the politics, my honorable funder, you are starting again. So, I'm also from Limpopo. Yeah. So yeah, that was an apology we are forwarding. We are not forwarding an apology because we feel we are guilty. We are doing that because someone has volunteered to be our mother, and most definitely after here they are going to buy us lunch as a mother. So we're going to start with the question raised by Honorable Makanda. What's your?
Moso.
Yeah, Moso. Around the grade 9 issue. We're not saying that it should be compulsory for a school to send a learner who has failed grade 9 twice consecutively to a TVET. We're saying that, in fact, we are raising that as if we're practicing this thing of paralegal, to say that there are people who have got or are not privileged to knowledge that when you have passed grade 9, you do not actually need to continue to grade 10, 11, and 12 if you are unable. There's an option for you to be able to go to achieve it. So it's only a recommendation. And this recommendation must be written in a report card to say that, hey, in China, it looks like this this issue are dealing with you, the issue says the matter law and there and there. So it is advisable that you go to a TVET. And it is something which has worked out. I mean, the artisans you see all across the country, they don't have metric. They just went to TVET, but they're driving nice today, they're working properly and everything else. Now, when you speak about the language feeling, you know, when Albert Luthuli was president of the ANC during the dark days of apartheid, a white journalist went to him. He asked Uthi, "You are saying that you are fighting apartheid, right?" And he says, "Yes, we are fighting apartheid. That is what the ANC stands for." And the journalist asked the president, "Why are you fighting apartheid? Why are you fighting an oppressor in his own language of English?" And when he responds, he says, "If you speak to a man in a language he understands, it goes to his brain. But if you speak to a man in his own language, it goes to his heart." So the feeling around the language in our schools should obviously be motivated by the language which we are more comfortable with. If you are comfortable with English, it's still fine. But you must still be cognizant of the fact that English is not your mother tongue. If you are Xhosa, if you are Tonga, if you are Pedi, no matter what you can do, you can put, there are these new creams nowadays where you put, the next day you turn out to be white. You can put those creams and what so not. But the fact will remain that you are a black person and your mother tongue is Tonga. So we are also commenting in the same space around the language policy issue. We say that we do not have a problem with any language in South Africa. But we need an inclusion of all languages in South Africa, because it cannot be correct that 28 years after democracy, we still go to an exam room in a country where we've been taught that English is the medium language of instruction. And when we arrive in that exam room, we're not even sure whether we're going to pass or not. We're not even sure what were the emotions of the person who said the exam at that particular point. We might arrive in an exam room and the paper is already difficult even before you enter the door. So it cannot be correct that in a country which has got 11 official languages, you arrive in an exam, the question paper has got two language options, and one of the languages is not even a language of your option. Then in Mpopo and Konko, where I come from, there's not African. By the way. Yes. Yeah, I know you from Adre Kruger there. So it cannot be correct that when you arrive in an exam, you find a question paper which has got only two language options. It's English and Afrikaans. I mean, Afrikaans is a language which I deem to be very difficult. And, you know, you have studied, you know, that when you see that question paper, there's Afrikaans there, and you are moved by the English version of the question paper, when you look at the Afrikaans, it gets even worse. So, what you are saying is that we should look at the demographics of a certain province. For instance, when we speak about the Eastern Cape, where Northanda comes from.
Honorable.
I was going to be together in 2024, yes. So. they're giving you the most of my money. So you see, Chef, the empathy which I'm making here is that in reviewing the language policy, this is power which is supposed to be given to the Department of Basic Education. Because in any case, the power belongs to the Department of Basic Education if it's the Department of Basic Education which prints the papers which comes in English and Afrikaans. So now we want the power to belong fully to the Department of Basic Education. Because there is a sense in which I believe that divisions or the, what you call, stop with the phones. There's a sense in which I believe that divisions in our society are embraced by the code of conduct in our schools and whatnot. But I don't think that they should not be African schools and whatnot, but we belong to the same country. If it's a school which is public, regulated by the Department of Basic Education, it should offer all the languages of the country. We cannot have a country within a country like what is happening in Orania. I know that if I have to go to Orania, I might be more with Rabba Bule there and there, but not that I will, honorable, not that I will not be.
Not
you. Oh, on Orania. They've got their own currency, they've got everything. They, the country
you.
Is a country of their own.
I invite you.
I want to kill me.
No, he must book the flight. The invitation is accepted.
So the emphasis which I'm making around the language police is that we acknowledge English to be the medium language of instruction in South Africa. And at least English is a language which, you know, growing up there in Kwankola, when you are rebuked as a young kid in Xitsonga, hey, you think that your parents don't love you, would even commit suicide because Xitsonga is very harsh to some extent, you know. But when they rebuke you in English, man, you feel like this child who's a lovey-dovey, what, you know. So that is why we have accepted English as a medium of language of instruction. And the English which we have accepted, by the way, is content, not accent. Yeah. So, the issue of alcohol, you know, we live in a democracy, and the decisions which are taken in the democracy should be binding to the minority. If we are to vote here, it is quite obvious here for who are the people who are going to lose, who are going to become a minority here, who are going to be murdered by processes. It's quite obvious, that one. And when we leave here after that voting, it means that even those who have lost will need to subscribe and abound by the decision which is taken here by a show of hands or whatever manner of voting. So we cannot say that we need to prioritize a certain society because there is a sense in which the society believes it should be differentiated to the rest of society or the majority. Alcohol remains one element in our society which continues to kill, more particularly our youth. Drugs, the same thing. So, like when we presented here, we said that we don't even need to get to the discussion where we speak about alcohol being sold for fundraising purposes. Regardless of whatever facilities you might have in your school, the fact of the matter remains that it is a school, and a school should be respected as such, regardless of where it is. It might be in Cape Town, it might be in Kwankowa, it might be in Makubastuk or wherever, but it is a school which is regulated by the Department of Basic Education. And the laws, therefore, must be stationary to all schools which are regulated by the Department of Basic Education. We understand that there are people who have got their own schools of thought there, and they might as well just go and sell alcohol in their own schools, not the public schools. So, the issue of...
Wait.
Yeah. I will deal with teenage pregnancy. Yeah. 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 So, where is that thing?
I just want to say,
Oh, yes. The issue of apartheid minority, I mean, apartheid government having a enforced ban to education or what's on, we understand fully. In fact, even the formation of COSA was as a result of the 1976 Soweto uprising, which rejected vehemently the imposing of Afrikaans as a medium language of instruction in South Africa. And that is a policy which was imposed by the apartheid government. So we're in a democracy. I don't know if it should allow us to impose certain decisions here in a democracy. So, but it is not a form of dictatorship, unlike what happened in during the dark days of apartheid. Because people are victimized today because a school is able to make its own code of conduct. For instance, I mean, look at the hair of the chair. Very beautiful. But if a grade 8 child, female, goes to a Sansuzi, with hair similar to that of the chair, she's going to be victimized. To say that, no, we do not allow this kind of hair, this and that. So, that is because the school has got its own code of conduct around her. But the girl is simply embracing her own hair, its nature, inevitable. So, we're not introducing or reintroducing apartheid tactics here. The apartheid tactics, if they are there, they are those ones of yesterday, which I don't want to repeat. Because I might be, chair might call security again. I saw one case a year was here, and I know it's security. So I don't want to go back there because you see, me, I'm just a slender, and that one. Yeah, I'm concluding. And then now, just to comment on the issue of undocumented learners. You know, we know that borders in Africa were introduced or imposed by people who are being defended by some here. We know that for a fact. And there is a discussion which we always have to say that it looks like when we speak about foreigners in South Africa, we only speak about Zimbabweans, we only speak about Ghanaians, or we only speak about Africans in general. We don't speak about the settlers. Because, like the cadre who was given a parole yesterday, the cadre remains an illegal foreigner because he was taken from Poland to come and kill Krisan. So he was just arrested in South Africa, but he's not documented. He's not a South African. He remains an illegal foreign. So the comment thereof is that it is important, it is imperative that when we go into a schooling system, we must accommodate and cater for people who are going to be able to account for. We're not going to take anyone and put him into a classroom because they've got the very same skin pigmentation as ours, or because they are seen as young, or because the United Nations says that we must educate everyone. If the United Nations wants to educate everyone, they must take them to England and educate them. It's still fine. We want people to be documented. But we're not saying that if a person is undocumented and he arrives in a school gate, that person must be turned away. As a teacher, you must then be able to assist that child to go through the relevant procedures to make sure that at the end of the day, the child is documented. Because we know that these little ones, it's not their problem that they're not documented. It's the wars which are happening in East Africa. They end up migrating to South Africa,
And then when they arrive in Sri Sande Paragwanath, they are promised a 3 week show of Safa. The parents just give birth every now and then. And then the kids come. But we're not going to chase them. They must be documented so that at the end of the day we are able to account for them. But most importantly, when we do the budget of education, we know that there is this number of people who are documented. Because comrades start stealing the fluctuating numbers to say that no, there are 3 million learners, what's on us. But when you arrive in those schools, you find that these learners are not documented. So it is for this reason that we do not reject at all undocumented learners. But we are saying that these learners must be assisted to be documented. Two other then will come and speak there and then and share.
Jerry, asked to be excused. I have to go and say something in the house. Nyakafu.
My name is Kwena Mpia, NEC member of Kosas, who's doing the question at Mukamuso Secondary School. I think I told the question of saying you are a learner or not. The first question was, are you learners or not? I think I've closed it. The second question that I'm going to answer is that one of teenage pregnancy. If we can check on the chair in our this thing of ours, we have recommended that anyone who gets pregnant, who is below 16 years old, must show us the boyfriend or that husband or baby daddy, so that we can open a case against that baby date. And again, I had someone saying, do we have a program regarding teenage pregnancy? Yes, we're working closely with the NECT, National Education Collaboration Trust, that comes with Amanda Mzan Convention, Ubuntu programs, Mchita Tumchi, Da, yes. And then, that's one of saying, how do we get this 80 million? Remember that we have a membership form. So, and our membership form is open from grade 6 to grade 12. So I think I've answered that 30 million. So currently we are running 30 million. Our membership is 30 million in Little House. You can come and count them. I think undocumented, you have answered them, complete book person in the class. The grade 9 is yours. I think most of the questions were answered there. Now I'm not going to speak about alcohol. Because if someone wants to sell alcohol in the school premises, that one is their own baby. We are not going to allow that nonsense in our schools. In fact, we are going to move you. Come. You'll get me one-on-one. Yeah, I think... Comrade... Okay, with the disrespect, I would like to apologize for what happened here, but I'm still repeating that if you want to sell alcohol, come, we'll get me, we'll move each other. But with regard to the disrespect, I would like to apologize for everything. Mfundi, apologies.
Are you on that question?
Chair of the session, we thank this opportunity that you gave us. Thank you, Comrade Paula. You can continue. But those ones of alcohol, I still maintain, they must come. So, get me.
Thank you, Jay. I think the questions that have not been answered, one, it's the migration process from grade R and that transition. It is not going fast. It is going very slow, but we see that there is progress. And in fact, it is also assisting, as Douglas was saying, the issue of unemployment. So it is also addressing that problem because we have a high rate of unemployment in this country. Another thing that has not been answered is the issue of funding for grade R. We can't be seated here having lunch using taxpayers' money and we say there's no funding for grade R. That means Parliament must think again. It can't be that ministers are driven in cars and we say that there's no time. They're just human beings just like anybody else. They were elected or appointed to lead our people. They must take taxis and buses just like us, or they must take Ubers if we're saying there's no money. They must fund are getting paid. In fact, we have a lot of money in this country, so it must just be directed to the right position. The issue of small loans. When I was doing the presentation, I only read the recommendation that we have. But what we really were saying is that there's a need to understand the difference between the types of agreements, so that the idea of small loans can be better understood. And what are the limits of these small leases? Because we can't just say small lease. I can say a small lease is 500,000 in my school, and where now you come and tell me, no, it should have been 10,000 rand. So we need to be able to also speak on the issue of figures, because we don't define small loans the same. To you, it can be 500. To me, it can be 1,000 rand. Consultation with the constituency that we lead. One, we are leading at a national level. Two, the structure of COSAS, it is an NEC, a PEC, regions, branches, and sub-branches. So when we compiled the report, it came from the ground to the national structure, and it was incorporated. So there was consultation. The rest has been covered by my comrades. Oh, lastly, the issue of respect. I think Utata Pyatbeck has assisted us a bit by saying that when we came here, or as per the invitation came, we never were shocked on what to do, how to behave whatsoever, how to respond, and you know, till now we deal with learners, learner to learner, we shout at each other, we disagree to agree, but at the end of the day, when we walk out of that door, we're all agreeing and we're all happy and we're smiling. Thank you very much, Che.
No, thank you very much. I think, like we've been doing with all other organizations, that we have noted your submission, and we are going to incorporate it with other submissions from other organizations. So before your flight leave you, we are releasing you.
Gabriel, I'm sharing up on me.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair.
All right. But now you are out of it. Can we get Mr. Sifunda?
Chair, I'm not sure if I'm audible.
Yes.
Okay, thanks. First of all, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable members of this committee, and different stakeholders in attendance, I would like to take this opportunity and greet you in the name of my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Chairperson, just a small disclaimer. I will be representing Maliham, the Seventh-day Adventist Church. I know that I've been kept out and referred to it with my particular as Funda JVJ, but I'm here on behalf of Maliham, the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Chairperson, maybe perhaps to give the members a brief introduction as to who is Malihambe. We are a Christian faith-based organization from Johannesburg in the East End, essentially a church that obviously conforms to the Bible as the Holy Word of God, and Seventh Day would come from us observing the Seventh Day Sabbath as a holy day of worship consecrated for rest and worship. And then Adventists, we are people waiting for the second coming for our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. But it's not only that, Chairperson. We as a religious organization believe that we should play an active role in society, where we also participate in such processes because we believe that we are affected directly or indirectly by outcomes of such processes. So, first and foremost as well, we also would like to appreciate the development of this bill. Myself, I'm an educator in the teaching fraternity, so I understand most of the issues in a dynamic way because I am exposed to the immediate environment we're discussing today. So our view is that we submit to the committee that this bill, according to our view, is a step in the right direction in the sense that it seeks to align our current educational laws to the context of our schools and society. And secondly, we also are of the view that the bill is trying to conform to constitutional imperatives and principles and values as dictated by Section 195 of our Constitution. And we speak of values such as professional ethics, where you would want to promote efficient use of resources in school and service that is equitable, impartial, and fair, that is free from bias. So the list is long and it goes on. And just to quote a few of the proposed amendments that we welcome as a religious organization, the amendment on making Grade R a compulsory initiative in schools, we welcome the Chairperson, and also the, you know, the enhancement of the authority of the HOD when it comes to his responsibilities or their responsibilities, and making South African Sign Language an official language. We also would like to welcome the amendment on encouraging schools to not only be one medium of instruction-based schools or institutions, but to consider also other languages. Also, Chairperson, we saw and were really excited that the bill talks and speaks to consultation with different stakeholders, that the minister now will have that leeway to do so. And we welcome that because we believe that there is there's counsel in ways of many. And building of a society that would accommodate, as the Honorable Member has said, participatory democracy. So that is our submission, Chairperson, on the bill. And moving on, we thought that we should first get the context right before we can engage with the Bella Bill. Of course, our scope, we try to widen it in our understanding of educational issues. So far, this is what we have, that schools are plagued with the following social ills. There's child violence against teachers, child-to-child violence, children in possession of assault weapons and drugs. There was a lot of questions on child pregnancy, or teenage pregnancy rather, and bullying, drunkenness by children, and abuse of substances. There's child suicide in schools. It goes without saying that dropout is also an issue. Touching and damaging of school facilities, children criminal offenses, and degradation of cultural values. But only to mention a few of the challenges that schools encounter. And then we then, Chairperson, would like to make the following submissions as Malihambe SDA. We start by Section 3, Subsection 6 of the South African Schools Act on the penalty for child non-attendance. So we also went as far as getting some empirical data and some information from a document that would better provide light into defining certain topical issues such as truancy and non-attendance. And this is the definition we came with for non-attendance, that it is an inexcusable absence from school, and it is a very complex and heterogeneous problem that can be influenced by a number of factors. So we believe that non-attendance is a leading factor and contributes highly to school dropout and is caused by a number of factors as previously mentioned. And I list the factors that we talk about under truancy used interchangeably or synonymously with non-attendance. The first sector chair would be individual that affects this particular topical issue in schools. That sometimes as children, they have a sense of low self-esteem, anxiety and substance abuse and learning difficulties. So there are some individual factors which contribute to them not being eager to go to school or attend school on a regular basis. The second factor would be family. Family, sometimes there would be conflict, there would be feuds, poverty, also a socio-economic problem. Parental values towards education, find that the parent is not motivational towards the educational attainment of the child. And that leaves the child wanting because he doesn't get the kind of ethical and moral support as to pursue his or her aspirations in education. Inconsistent and ineffective discipline at home is also an issue. And judging also from my experience dealing with different parents and homes and issues basically which plague schools. Lack of parental involvement in school is also an issue that contributes to non-attendance. So there are also other issues on the third sector from school which affect non-attendance, such as poor teaching, negative school culture, curriculum itself, dissatisfaction with school, bullying, violence. And the last factor would be community or contextual factors, speaking to your broader issues in the society, the race, ethnicity, socio-economic status, violence, and substance abuse, and neighborhood characteristics. So I've put a reference there to indicate that this was generally a consultative process with documents that provided more insight on the issues. So our view and submission is that in addressing this issue of non-attendance, we need to adopt a multi-dimensional view to issues that speaks to a problem that is multifaceted and not take a one-dimensional approach. So in that saying, we want to probably ask that the department really looks into the issue and seek to address the issues from the root going up. So the penalty clause is not a new idea. It is an old provision of the Act. What has changed is the punitive measure of 6 months to 12 months. And then we had to ask ourselves the question, was there an indication from the department on the efficiency of the 6 months imprisonment? Were the cases referred to the authorities whereby parents had issues with non-attendance? We still haven't heard of any. So we then asked that increasing it from 6 months to 12 months give us a solution. So the following would be a recommendation, that the department replace the penalty clause with compulsory counseling and compulsory attendance of psychosocial support programs, because I think we've shown that the issues that we're talking about are multifaceted and they have a lot of factors. So in extreme cases, the parent does community service for 12 months. Such we propose because we don't want to remove an anchor from the home and a pillar. And I'm really denying the child of a caregiver, because the moment you remove a parent from the household, they're presenting problems to the child. As the member has indicated in this chamber, that there was a judgment that sort of spoke something to the effect that the best person who can, you know, speak about the best interest of the child and understand and know what to give the child is the parent himself or herself. So we don't see it a good idea for the department to send people to prison, but rather use corrective measures that could bring them back to society. So we also propose an establishment of psychological services to be provided to schools to support both the educators and learners. Chair, because you know, the department has an initiative and it's working to a certain extent, but they are inundated with a lot of referrals from schools. Find that in a typical setup of a district department, you'll find one psychologist based there dealing with about plus minus give or take 20 schools. And that is not efficient at all, because you end up having a lot of protracted cases and a backlog of those issues and referrals, Chairperson. So we then ask if the department be amenable to mobilizing and establishing psychologists in schools, because they need the psychosocial support. And not only learners, but educators as well. So this will address the community, the family, and other factors that we've previously mentioned. I've also mentioned that it will also benefit the educators, because they also fall victims of a lot of mishaps in the school environment. And then moving on to the next section, section 3, so section 7 of SASA, the penalty for disruption of schooling. We are of the view that this couldn't be more relevant than what was crafted and created in the bill itself, because it is an unlawful, unjustifiable, and unreasonable conduct by generally people who want to make political points by disrupting schools. And we are of the view that it should be met with, you know, the full might of the law, and we are against such a conduct and the justification thereof. So, Chair, we are, however, of the view that attention should be given to a solution that would be viable in terms of addressing core issues. We understand that most of these issues, they are masked in a societal phase where they are society-based issues, but they end up influencing change and affecting schools immediately. But we also say harsh punitive measures, perhaps the department should be reluctant and a bit apprehensive in implementing those, because they won't alleviate the problem, but seek to use such corrective measures as previously recommended, the minimum sentence of 6 months, community work to 12 months. We also like to propose that the department looks into working with authorities and the different tiers of governance, where you will find that information is shared amongst the different stakeholders. Whenever there's going to be a protested strike, a protest, authorities communicate that to institutions which are school-based, and schools would be able to beef up their security and put safety measures, because what happens is they seldom have an idea what is coming, you know, for them. And also to enhance a working relationship with the community by working with the community police forums, because sometimes they are the ones who would know what would be looming the following day before a protest would erupt, you know, unexpected. They would have communicated with the school. So school governing bodies are community members, and they should be able to also assist the school with that kind of relational arrangement. And that designated areas for public demonstration protests should be allocated away from schools. That is our submission. We're not sure if it's being presumptuous of us, if it's not done yet, but would like to put it out there. And then the Section 5 of SASA on the admissions of schools, admissions in school, it's a topical issue. There's been controversy, litigation, and general confusion on the subject of admission in schools. But we note the landmark court judgments, which provided clarity and direction on the contentious issue of admission in schools. So a lot has been said also on this particular clause or provision. We therefore welcome the amendment of Section 5 of SASA to include the powers of the HOD to approve language policies in schools. Because we think there was, I think, a session here where one of the honorable committee members spoke about center holding. So we do believe that it will boost accountability and bring credibility to the issue where some conflict may potentially arise. There will be a center that will hold. And we welcome the inclusion of consultation with the SCB before any amendments can be made to the school's language policy. This is a direct recognition to us that SCBs are pertinent and quite critical stakeholders in the schooling sector and the education sector as a whole. Yeah, and then Chairperson, moving on, we go to Section 8A of SASA, the random search and seizures. Just here would be quotations from newspaper articles on statements made by some several teachers, educators who were affected by a violent mishap at school. Now, the teacher has passed away, and all that he was trying to do was to bring discipline and order in the school. And the statement was made by the national spokesperson of the Department of Basic Education, where there was a teacher stabbed by a learner trying to reprimand the learner from skipping the queue, from jumping the queue in a feeding scheme. So it's typical cases which happened in school. And this one was from another incident, by the way, where where a teacher speaks that it was not the first and certainly not the last time that a teacher who tried to maintain discipline was assaulted. A learner tried to attack the teacher with a pole because he rebuked the learner about his behavior. But a colleague was hit on the head with a baseball bat while another colleague was stabbed with a knife at school. So it's there, it's public knowledge. You come across this particular statement. So it shows beyond reasonable doubt that there is a problem in schools of violence against teachers and learners. So there must be mitigation measures against this. And we are of the view, Chair, that something must be done, and part of that solution must come from the legislative processes, such as this amendment of the education, basic education laws. So we start by welcoming the insertion of learner, substituting the group of learners for such, because if you wait for that, it might be too late. You might not get an opportunity to mitigate a potential, hazardous situation. So furthermore, we'd like to recommend the following provision be added to subsection 2 under 8A, that subject to subsection 3, the principal or his or her delegate may at random search any learner for dangerous objects or illegal drugs as a safety measure. Because I think there the provision speaks about reasonable suspicion. And it boggles the mind because you don't walk around suspecting that something will happen each and every single day in a schooling context. These things, they just happen out of the blue, and no one actually asked for that to happen. So unless we had intuition and were able to judge that there's a potential danger looming, then the reasonable suspicion would be quite efficient in the source. But we're saying that that be replaced by as a safety measure, that the search should be done as a safety measure in the presence of a police officer where possible, so that they can also feel protected and not violated as learners. Firstly, would like to further recommend the following amendments to Section 8A, Subsection 3A of SASA, that a search contemplated in Subsection 2 may be conducted with consideration of relevant factors, including but not limited to. Because if you look at the provision, it speaks about an exhaustive list that if these requirements or these factors are not met, a search and seizure cannot be done. So we find it problematic because it doesn't, present a safety approach in schools, but rather, as much as we appreciate that they have fundamental rights, that is our learners, we need to protect each and every single person within the schoolyard. So we also would like to add that the best interest of the learner in question or of any other learner at the school. So this one, the Section 3, Subsection A, Roman Figure 1, will obviously be amended, because if you start with learner instead of group of learners, everything else subsequent to that should be amended to learner, not group of learners. So that's what we were just indicating there. And the safety and health of the learner in question or of any other learner and any other person at the school, because the Act limits it to learners. As much as we understand, it is a regulatory framework that deals with the conduct of learners, but also this is a safety issue and measure. It must encompass and accommodate all the different parties which are present at school, be your groundsmen, be your educators, be your teachers. They should be protected. So finally, the addition of Clause 3A, Roman Figure 5, the interest of public good. In all those relevant factors where a search and seizure should happen, we are of the view that the interest of public good should be added as a factor when a search and seizure takes place. So we believe that this will alleviate a lot of issues of safety in schools. And then Section 10 of SASA on corporate punishment, we dealt with the issue of assault of teachers and learners, and we believe that adding this particular clause will also assist in the safety issue. We would like to add the following clause: no learner may assault a teacher, any other learner, or any other person at a school, during school activity, or in a hostel accommodating learners of a school. So this would be in addition to that clause there. Any learner who contravenes subsection 2, Roman Figure 1, is guilty of an offense and liable on conviction to a sentence which could be imposed for the offense obviously that would be prescribed by the Child Justice Act, because it deals with the criminal capacity of learners. And Section 8A, sale of alcohol, I'm trying to be concise, Chairperson, as they gave me an indication that I should have a 15-minute presentation. I'm not sure how I'm doing with time, but I'm trying my best. Section 28.2 of the Constitution speaks about the best interest of the child. So one might argue that the sale of alcohol and alcohol consumption in schools during the said activities will be strictly monitored. One cannot guarantee that, Chairperson. That is our submission. One cannot guarantee a child-friendly environment that is free from violence, moral degeneration, conflict, drinking, and driving. It is needless to say that the sale of alcohol might expose the child to a toxic environment that can render the child vulnerable to a lot of danger. Perhaps we need to put it on a scale of the probabilities of success against failures to check on our experience and knowledge that we have to prejudge the situation. Do we have more gains than losses when we're introducing alcohol in schools? This exercise is, put simply, hard to manage and very difficult to monitor because it speaks to different demographics, social economic context for different institutions and school-based organizations. So we are therefore of the view that this law should be removed and should not be considered in this bill. Schools can find other creative ways of fundraising which may avoid bringing a lot of bad than good. Because we are seeing a hazard here that could present more problems than solutions. And you look at the material and operative weight of this inclusion to the schools as its fundraising. But then at the behest of what? Of safety, vulnerability, and compromising the interests of the child. At Section 51 of SASA Home Education, we welcome the regulation of home education. We believe that this will add more structure, value, support to home education with quality assurance. We believe that this will enhance the credibility and status of home education and increase opportunities for learners to have more access in higher institutions. Why? Because there was a reference made by a committee member about the baseline. Because as it is now, higher institutions, they have apprehension of admitting these learners because of their question on the credibility of the qualification. So we are saying, as a religious organization, it will bring more more agility and credibility that will better enhance home education. And we are, however, opposed to the view that parents should bear all the assessment costs. We would like to recommend that parents be subsidized by the Department of Basic Education on compliance costs, such as paying for markers and invigilators. That is the financial burden we don't encourage, we discourage. Centralized procurement of LTSM material. Chairperson, decentralized procurement puts the onus responsibility where it belongs, that is to the school and the SGP. Once we take that prime role, we'll be not only dealing with a dysfunctional procurement process in schools, but also would be taking a very fundamental role from the SGB. Centralizing would create backlogs and unnecessary administrative challenges and delays. Centralizing creates one point which, when it fails, many learners in several schools could be affected at one time. Perhaps there's a protest in that particular center or that particular department that deals with that, and that will end up affecting the whole supply chain, because if there's one center, the whole process will be affected. And this will lead to a lot of challenges and blame game between the center and the educational institutions. Centralizing LTSM procurement will stifle economic activity in the sense that currently there are a lot of different service providers who get opportunities to assist the school in procurement. Once you take away that procurement, you are disadvantaging a lot of them, because there will be obviously a database they will be working with from the head of the department. So this will in turn affect small businesses, of which mostly are local. This will ultimately lead to high unemployment rates and more social issues. So this decentralized procurement will introduce blame games. I've already mentioned that. Now, our recommendations on this, Chair, will be, we recommend that the procurement phase at various schools under the SGB
recommend that accountability and monitoring of finances and school accounts be tightened. I think there was also an insertion of clause 43, subsection 5A, on submission of quarterly finance reports to the HOD, which we see this as an effort to tighten the accountability and monitoring of finances. But Chair, we want to maybe bring it to the committee that the SCPs are just volunteers from the community. Some of them, they seldom have a background in those finances. When they go and join school committees. And a person typically dealing with a budget, a home budget of, say, 2,000 to 3,000, now will be dealing with allocation from the department of hundreds of thousands, and they've never been formally trained by the department to handle these finances. So we are of the view that there should be trainings and development programs for both the school and the SCPs on the handling of finances. And the setup of the value chain monitoring and report back systems, we believe, will bring in efficiencies. I'm almost done, Chairperson. I think I'm a few slides away. Section 27 of SASA, one of the core functions of the SCB is to raise funds for the school in order for the school to meet its needs. Some parents who join the SCBs are unemployed and stay far from the school. They would usually use public transport to attend meetings, school activities, and workshops. We are of the view that the consideration should be given to the different socio-economic status of the SCB members in different schools. We are also of the view that the unemployed SCB parents may be assisted with traveling expenses, more especially if they stay far from the school and cannot afford to travel. We believe that this will avert a situation where parents abstain from joining SCB committees in schools, as they might see such an exercise costly and onerous on them. So we support the amendment of Section 23, Subsection 2, that speaks about the remunerating of SCB members for their services being discouraged and work in schools. However, Chair, we want to probably be a bit technical with terms there, and argue semantics a bit, that perhaps when we say remuneration, we are not saying financial assistance, because remuneration is it's due pay for service done. So we're not saying that they should be paid for their work, but we're saying that they should be assisted where there are compelling reasons and the reason can be shown. Because this will discourage a lot of them joining the SCP committees. I would have spoken about my context, but I don't think the law allows me to do that, where there was a lot of, you know, reluctance when they had to join the committee. So imagine if that happens, where they are told they cannot be assisted. And they generally don't have money to travel to and from school. So we submit that, Chairperson, they need to be financially assisted. Hence, we're asking for this inclusion to be made to the Section 27 of SASA, Subsection 3, that a governing body member may be financially assisted to attend meetings and school activities if a need can be shown and there are compelling reasons. One might argue that there is really no reason for us to put this, you know, clause or provision in there. But I tell the Chairperson, sitting in an SCP, there will be a lot of tacit, you know, interpretation that this might suggest that. So unless we're explicit, because many of them might interpret it as meaning they can never be assisted financially and fear of being charged, you know, and so on and so forth. So we don't want tacit, you know, interpretation of this provision. Hence, we want an explicit inclusion that will speak to what we believe will help the SCBs to continue being voluntary bodies that play a critical role in a democratic society and in bringing efficiency to the education system. And the last slide is the submission on the Employment of Educators Act. We are asking for an inclusion. We believe that the Act is quiet about the diverse cultural beliefs and religious observances of educators. I think there's only a policy that deals with that so far. But you know the line of authority when it comes to an Act, policy and regulation. The Act is at the peak and it's the highest. So once you add it in the Act, it feeds to all other subsidiary or the policy as and the regulation subject to the Act. So we are asking that this inclusion be added in Chapter 1, Section 3, Subsection 6 of the EEA, that schools should give consideration to diverse cultural beliefs and religious observances of educators. We are grateful for this opportunity, Chairperson, as Manihamba the Seventh Day Adventist, to make a submission to the committee, and we hope Chair will get quite a positive feedback and fruitful engagement, and that our submission will be viable. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Ms. Fonda. Members, that's the presentation from Mr. Fonda, Honorable Tumela.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity, and let me welcome the presentation from Malihamba SDA Church. Well, I have one or two questions to ask. First is that you identify compulsory psychosocial as the other critical intervention. What happens when parents and learners refuse such support? Does it mandatory psychosocial support impact the child's or the parent's rights? Secondly, from your observation on admission policy matters, why is the matter contentious despite the clause including consultation as part of cooperative governance? Which are the factors creating discomfort with the role of SGB? And lastly, Chair, why is Malihamba SDA Church of the view that teachers should do random searches? Won't this create danger? And why shouldn't the police do this occasionally? And teachers can request random searches. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. I just want to ask quite a few questions. The first one is, how would you address truancy as an issue? You know, since you've mentioned, you know, the issue of imprisonment and so on, and what would you suggest, you know, be the corrective measure instead of what you submit to this committee that you object to, that parents be subjected to because of truancy? The second one, have you done a calculation to determine how many psychosocial support staff would be needed based on the proposal that you've made today? Second, lastly, how does the change to as a safety measure protect the learners in particular? And how would they define as a safety measure to ensure that it's not abused? Same with the interest of the public good, as often is abused. The last one is, are you aware of the concerns that have been raised by the homeschooling sector that have been here early on today? Some of them, the Pistolozzi Trust was here last week, that have made presentations and the burden the bill will place on those parents, to register their children or around registration, and learners, compliance with several curriculums that have been put, in that place based on some of the proposals that you've made here and the issues that they have raised based on their own presentations that, pose the burden on them when they're expected to actually register with the department, and the proposals that are made and the bill that can hinder and invade their space, at home and not being able to allow the students in the choice that they want to provide for their children in terms of of curriculum. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. And thank you very much for the presentation. I see I'm going to push up by him. I have one question that I would need clarity on. I want to check with you if you have or
your association have made research why learners attack teachers, and what are the findings of your research you have made, if you have made a research or the action there. Thank you, Chair.
I'm interested to hear. I saw on your presentation in relation to the understanding of the climate speaking that you welcome the regulation on home education, and that I just need to get to that word that you've used, and I'm interested for you to expand on how you see the Department for Basic Education. You said if you welcome the regulation on home education and you believe that this will add more structure, value, support to home education with quality assurance, how do you foresee that the regulation in its current form is actually going to do that, is going to provide support, especially, and I'm talking from the perspective of parents who choose to home educate their children at home. So in the current regulation, given the capacity of the department, how do you foresee that the current form is actually going to assist home educators? And then you said it will increase the credibility and status of home education and increase opportunities for learners to have more access in higher institutions. If you could also, just in terms of that, expand. Because I say this because my experience with home education specifically, and I speak as a parent whose children have had portions of their education through not the schooling system, but alternatively, that children that actually come from such an environment is much more ready for, say, university, for instance. They do actually very well in university. And I do know your community as the segregated members. I also know, in terms of your certainly tertiary background, that you have such quality learning, specifically tertiary. So I'm just very curious, that how do you think that this is actually going to assist those schooling communities that, choose it either because of convictions or because of the particular needs of their children to do home education? How is this current legislation actually going to enhance it? Because by doing that, I think it will give us also an idea to the department of as to your input and what. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. This is from the FDA. The 6 to 12 months terminal to close. The submission we are making to us is that it must be replaced by psychosocial services. Vandalism as well as to be met with psychosocial services. Now, as you are making this recommendation, have you taken consideration of the fact that there is no much social worker personnel in our country? Now, if you are recommending that it should be psychosocial services, where do you think these social workers, or rather the people that must do counseling, must be coming from? And then on clause 8, section 8, what are these other ways of fundraising that you are proposing should be looked at? On clause 37, section 51, you are indicating that you are opposed to the view that there must be a payment of the assessment cost.
on the issue of the homeschooling. Now, parents that are conducting their own education, they do not pay school fees because their children are not most in the public schools. So, what would be the motivation for the department to pay their assessment? And actually, as the SDA, what is your actual view on home education? What do you think? Do you think that it should proceed the way it is proceeding, or what is your view on home education? And then on close 34, you are raising the issue of the HODs procuring the LCSM. What are your views on the situation where learners in some provinces receive LCSM late, way beyond the school reopening? Would centralization not help in this regard to avoid learners being out of learning and resources? And then your presentation is alluding that schools should give consideration to the diverse cultural beliefs and religions. Our country is a unitary state, and I am interested in getting more from you to understand what do you mean with this issue of the diverse cultural beliefs and religion. Thank you very much, and let me allow you then, Mr. Funda, to respond.
Thank you, Jefferson. First, let me start from back, to the front. Chairperson, on our view and submission on cultural beliefs and religious observances, honestly, we are aware that the Constitution gives effect to that. However, as a sector, what we are saying is that perhaps we should put more ways of regulating that for teachers, because there are diverse cultural beliefs and observances which has to do with religion. But when you look at the Educators Act that binds me and regulates me as a teacher, you seldom find anything that speaks to that. So we were just based solidly on that point of it should say something about our fundamental right to religion and culture and beliefs. So with regard to the procurement of the HOD and the LTSM, I think, Chair, we as the department, not myself, but the department itself, should be probably courteous not to make subjective occurrences principle and law, because we believe that data analysis, you know, evidence-related research should guide some developmental work in policy making. So when we look at the issue, is it at a wide spectrum that challenge, or we have subjectively cases of schools which are mismanaging finances, and what is the issue regarding that? Is it that schools are not managing the finances well, or the issue is an administrative issue perhaps that comes from top downward with the entire management of the school? So we are afraid of applying a blanket theory to issues where we use one solution for all in different contexts. And then the view on home education, our church is quite fond on home education, and it's one of the religious institutions that really encourages home education. We even have our own institutions. We encourage our own members to, you know, send their kids to our institutions. But we are talking about a public bill that perhaps will govern and regulate the entire society when it comes to the issue, not looking only on our views on the matter, but at law as law. So we as much as had a lot of contentious engagement at church level on this issue, we had to understand perhaps where the department was coming from. And our understanding, when we spoke about it being an efficient maybe way, we were looking at it being organized and probably the monitoring aspect of the home education as a sector, because maybe our experience would be a subjective one,
where our students who would want to gain access to higher institutions. They'll probably be asked, you know, endless questions. Some would have to take tests, and some end up being deterred and dejected in the process, and will have now to, as a church, look for other alternatives of maybe perhaps starting building our own higher institutions as a church because of that, you know, difficulty of adaptation from a home to a mainstream schooling, you know, or system of learning and education. And then must there be a payment of assessment costs, parents, they do not pay school fees. Chair, yes, parents do not pay school fees who are homeschooling, much as parents who are also in public schools. Most of our schools are non-fee-paid because the government and the department is socio-economic sensitized. So we want to put them under the same bracket of that same accommodation of a non-fee-paying school. What are these other ways of fundraising? Honestly, we believe in stakeholder engagement. We don't believe in a school coming up with this whole lot of amazing activities to, you know, augment the school's resources. Our view is that there should be a collaborative effort between the parents, the SEP, and the schools, and ideas will just come up, and there will actually be a lot of things that you never have imagined that could bring a lot of revenue to schools and, you know, bring in a lot of capital injection to school. So apart from mentioning specific activities and events, we don't want to go there, but want to say let us encourage, you know, a collaborative, participatory educational system where all the different stakeholders have a part to play in their what? In their upbringing of their kids. And then a 6 to 12 month penalty clause must be replaced by psychosocial services. No, we're not saying that, Chairperson, at all. We're not saying that it should be replaced. That is one of the recommended programs which could actually be done as a mitigation measure. But if you could read back, we are proposing community service as a punitive measure for those parents, not only the psychosocial programs. And I've explained the structure and the monitoring of the quality assurance of the home education. While learner skilled teachers we made research. Look, Chair, I'll be quite honest with the committee. We had an engagement with basically people from our organization on the issues. Hence, we are coming to the committee on the 22nd and we would have come earlier if perhaps we would have consolidated and curated all their views. But we had to look within that scope. And not to say it is limited, no. Because most of them, people who are in the education sector, if not some of them. So we had an informed view. At the same time, we decided as a religious organization, because we have certain values that we subscribe to, and we want to submit a particular view, we have to keep it within that scope and focus. Are you aware of the submissions of the homeschooling sector? Definitely. We've even read the documents, the consultations of the minister with the different, you know, Pestalozzi Trust and other, you know, stakeholders and organizations on homeschooling. We read up, hence we, Chairperson, had to really, you know, do our own research on the issue of the compliance costs and the registration fees, because it was suggested by those documents and reports that we were familiarizing ourselves with. So the proposals which were made there was what actually got us to a point of recommending certain things on homeschooling. How will they define the recommendation as a safety measure? We believe, Chair, that the prime attention and focus should be in everyone within the schooling space, because we need to prioritize public goods and public interest. So we want to encourage that by all means to say this search and seizure should promote public good and public safety. How many psychosocial staff would be needed? That would be thumbsucking. We wouldn't, at the top of our heads, you know exactly. Maybe perhaps there needs to be some a lot of ground research on that aspect. But our understanding
is that there is a lot of psychosocial problems and issues in schools, which are yielding and leading to, you know, this violence and the deterrence that we want to put as a mitigation factor on safety and violence. So we believe that if we use this as a solution, it will come as a strategy that will better assist in this problem and issue. So truancy is an issue. What would be the best corrective measures? I think we've already alluded to that in the presentation, that we propose community service for those parents. Why is Mali Hambe promoting that teachers should conduct random searches and seizures? Chair, I think the bill makes provision for that, and there's accommodation for that, where it speaks about the principal or his or her delegate. So it would be the judgment of the principal and his discretion as to how he delegates those responsibilities where there's a need that arises. Which other factors are causing discomfort to SGBs? There's quite a range of them, but we decided to narrow our focus to what was presented in the Bella Bill. So we didn't want to have scattered brains about a lot of issues, but to really focus on this submission. And then compulsory psychosocial, what happens when parents refuse to attend the psychosocial program? I think when we say South African Schools Act, we are enforcing law. And law would mean compliance. And compliance, if not, you know, you have to be taken to task for that. So we are trying to have an attitude of enforcement of that particular law when it's promulgated. So we don't want to preempt that much as to what could be an outcome, but at the same time, we are saying, as Mali Hambe, there is a lot of progress, and the department is really trying its best to come up with effective, you know, ways on alleviating most of the social issues in schools. Yeah, I hope I have done justice to most, if not all, of the questions. But yeah, that would be my response to the questions.
No, thank you very much, Justice Fonda. We have taken note of your submission, the committee, and we are, of course, going to incorporate them in all the other submissions. Can we have Mrs. Gudla from the South Africa Ghana Command?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'd like to greet the members of the Portfolio Committee. Chairperson, this bill, which this committee has to consider, was tabled by the minister who took office in 2009. And since that period till now, there's been a number of changes in the basic education sector. However, it took as much time as her being in office for her to table such a bill to align basic education legislation with the changes that have occurred in the basic education landscape of this country. We, however, as the First and Learners Command, we, however, welcome that the fact that the bill was finally tabled in this regard, and we are here today to provide our views and our opinions and recommendations on this bill on behalf of those whom we seek to represent, which are the learners of this country. Well, Chairperson, we have carefully studied this bill. Internally, we have deliberated on the provisions that this bill seeks to make, and some of these provisions we welcome, and some we vehemently reject with the contempt that they deserve. We have further noticed that the bill does not seek to amend the National Education Policy Act, which is problematic to us because that particular piece of legislation is outdated in itself. and should have never been passed in its current form by this parliament. Chairperson, the bill does not in its current form seek to advance education in the Republic, neither does it seek to respect nor promote the respect for constitutional rights enshrined in Chapter 2 of the Constitution of the Republic. This is because the bill does not in any manner seek to louden the voices of the voiceless learners in many public schools. The minister likes to come, I don't know, she even comes here, and whenever she addresses the public and the media as well, says that she has consulted a number of stakeholders. However, in none of those consultations has she ever consulted learners. Even Kwasa, that was here, she has never consulted them on any issue that is of great importance in the sector. Especially during the COVID-19 pandemic, where she would willy-nilly just make a decision after consultation with the Council of Education Ministers, which are just MECs that are her peers, in our opinion. And she would never consult the primary stakeholder of basic education, and that is the learners. Because basic education seeks to serve the learners, not parents, not teachers, but learners. We do also welcome a number of provisions that the bill proposes. And this includes the definitions inserted into Section 1 of the South African Schools Act. So this would be Clause 1 of the bill. We welcome these definitions as they would provide the principal act with clarity on a number of issues. We did not know before this that what is basic education. We could not clearly define it in statute. So, yeah, we further welcome the fact that Grade R will now be compulsory as the entry point into basic education. And we further urge that Parliament consider promulgating legislation that will align this introduction of Grade R into the basic education system as the entry point into our schools with the Early Childhood Development Sector, which has now been shifted into the responsibility of the Minister of Basic Education by the President. So we need, either this bill must make provisions for such, or Parliament should enact another form of legislation in this regard in order to make such provisions. And then when you do call us again, we will have proper input on that. We also welcome the fact that members of SGBs, their spouses, and immediate family members would have to, on an annual basis, disclose their private interests. This would allow for better accountability and also assist in addressing the issue of corruption in our schools. This would prevent what happened in the now separate Cullinan Combined School in the Gauteng province during the years leading to 2018, where the principal of that school misused school funds and employed family members and relatives and friends through the SGP. This would ensure that that would never happen again. This would also prevent what happened at Bowerich Technical High School this year, where thousands of rands went missing. We still don't know where that money is. The principal was always a constitutional delinquent in that regard. So we think that perhaps the bill should also make provisions for lifestyle audits for senior members of SGB and management in our schools, so that we are able to know that if you are a principal of a school, you can't be owning certain things because of what you get paid and looking as well as what you have disclosed as your private interest as well. So we have accounting officers in many schools that are living a lifestyle that is beyond what they earn or what they legally earn in that regard. We further welcome the recognition of South African Sign Language as an official language for the purpose of learning. We, however, recommend that the wording of the clause include that it be recognized not just as a language recognized for learning, but as a language for teaching, learning, and instruction. And this would complement the current process to amend the Constitution to provide for South African Sign Language to be an official language of this country. We, however, reject a number of provisions, as I stated earlier. And yeah, I believe that the majority of South Africans would agree with us in saying that permitting the sale of alcohol at school functions, for whatever reason, you know, they came with this thing of fundraising and all of that. It's not, in our opinion, it wouldn't do justice to what the situation is at the moment. We saw what happened in earlier this year at the in the Eastern Cape, where dozens of children died at a liquor establishment where they were not supposed to be there in the first place. And this was not the first incident, and I'm sure it was not the last. It might have been the only one that had been reported, but we know taverns in our townships, those of us who come from townships, we know taverns in our rural communities, those of us who come from rural communities, we know that these establishments do sell alcohol to children. Even though they might say that, no, where my grandmother lives in Mpumalanga, they would say, no, bam chumile. In other words, they sent the child to go buy alcohol on behalf of the adult. It has become a norm. So if you are going to allow the sale of alcohol at functions on the school premises and disallow a tavern from operating near the school, then is Parliament not contradicting itself in terms of the laws that it passes? What is the purpose of having laws that would that prohibit someone from opening a tavern near a school whilst someone can sell alcohol on the school premises? It really doesn't make any sense. So we hope that this portfolio committee will ensure that this particular clause is dealt with accordingly. There mustn't be alcohol sold at school premises. There mustn't be anyone in the possession of alcohol. Because you can say, you know, I heard earlier on those were the argument that, but no, they're selling it to adults. What is the likelihood of an adult leaving a can of beer to go somewhere unattended? A child picks it up, drinks. These things, they do happen. It can happen. An adult who is under the influence cannot be trusted with ensuring that whatever alcoholic beverage they have, they keep it away from children. So why not keep alcohol away from children through removing that particular part of the clause that would allow for this? So we agree with that there shouldn't be alcohol sold in schools, but as far as the proposed paragraph C and the other provisions of that clause, it just doesn't make any sense. Do we perhaps want Enyo Beni Tavern tragedy to repeat itself as a Mamelodi High School tragedy or as a Senzangakhona Secondary School tragedy? Is this what we want for ourselves as a country? And in doing so, you should take cognizance of what Section 28, Subsection 2 of the Constitution of the Republic provides. That is that the interest of the child, the best interest of the child, are of paramount importance. And you cannot overlook that as a portfolio committee, because this bill, once it has been passed by this House, must be consistent with the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, which is the highest law of the land. Chairperson, another concern is the establishment of schools with focus on special talent and whatnot. We are concerned about this particular provision, not because we are against the establishment or the prioritization of science, technology, and mathematics in our townships, but because we generally don't have enough schools. We have schools in Mpumalanga where there are 70-plus learners in a classroom. My father is an educator. He once taught a class of more than 80 learners. A class, not a grade group, a mere class. So if we don't have enough schools to start with, then why convert certain schools into MSTAs like provincial education departments have been doing in the past? Kwamhlanga Secondary School, for example, in the Mpumalanga province, has been converted into a men's, into a maths, science and technology school. by the Mpumalanga Department of Education. It is the only school in that area of Kwamhlanga that offers grade 10 to 12. In other words, a learner who lives right next to the school and has no ambitions of being a doctor, an engineer, or a scientist, and might perhaps have ambitions of becoming a lawyer one day, or have ambitions of becoming a tourism specialist, or have ambitions of being a researcher in parliament, for example. They don't need to do physical sciences. They don't need to do life sciences as a subject. They don't need to do agricultural sciences and all of these, even pure mathematics in that regard. They don't need to. So why limit them to that particular stream of subject? Because in this case, in Kwamhlanga Secondary School, a learner who lives next to the school and doesn't have ambition of doing what these subjects seek to achieve would have to travel to Zakenya High School, which is either a 45-minute walk to the school every morning and every afternoon, or they would have to take a taxi each and every day to go and attend school in order for them to do what they want to do with their life. Parliament, the minister, cannot impose on our children what they should do with their futures. If there are a million children that want to be that want to work in a field that is not in the math, science, and technology sector, then let them do so, because they are going to produce workers who are very angry, workers who do not who are not happy where they are. We're going to have a high suicide rate because there are people who are working in sectors they don't want to work in. That is why we're having the issues we have at most of our government office, departmental offices like Home Affairs, where you get there and the workers are just angry and you don't even know why. Because they're not happy. Apart from the fact that the government is denying them the raise that they want, they're generally not happy. So do we want to have a society that is always angry, that is always unhappy with where they are? Are we really developing if that's the case? So, Chairperson, learners have always been sidelined, as I said before, in decision-making. And this not just by the minister and NECs in each and every province, but also by schools. And they are sidelined on issues that affect them. The current legislation does not allow learners who are members of SGBs to form part of certain meetings that deal with certain critical issues that affect them. For example, the appointment of staff to schools. You can't say that you can elect a learner into an SGB, but then you deny them the opportunity to air their concern about the appointment of a particular candidate for an SGB post. You can't. Doesn't make sense. It defeats the whole purpose of learners being represented. If learners themselves can't have a say on who becomes an educator in the school, if learners themselves can't have a say on who becomes an admin assistant at the school, the same way members of parliament are given the right to have a say on who becomes a judge in each and every high court in this country, who becomes a judge in the Supreme Court of Appeal, who becomes a judge in the Constitutional Court, learners should be given that same opportunity, because you as members of parliament will represent the general public when you go there to the JSC and question each and every candidate that subject themselves to the JSC. So learners should also form part of these interviewing panels to ask these candidates who want to be teachers critical questions on how they plan to teach, because they represent the learners. And Section 11 of the Second School Act, as it stands, provides that the RCN of the school is the only recognized representative body of learners at the school. So if you're going to establish a recognized a body that represents learners, but then you sideline it from decision-making in such a manner, then why establish the RCL in the first place? Why provide for them to be elected into SGBs in the first place? Chairperson, it is right that the Constitution of the Republic is the most supreme law of the Republic. It is the same constitution that guarantees all the right to freedom of association. However, this right is not enforced through the existing legislation, the South African Schools Act, and this bill as well does not seek to even advance this right. Hence, we saw it necessary to protect the rights of learners to freely associate themselves with movements such as ourselves, the Southern Learners Command, and COSAS, who were here earlier on. By the insertion of the provisions we have proposed to Section 11 of the South African Schools Act, I think we are the only ones that have actually made recommendations on the wording of certain provisions of these of this bill, and even insertions of new amendments that are not even part of this bill. Section 11, subsection 2 of the South African Schools Act, in its current form, has been in effect since the commencement of the Education Laws Amendment Act 57 of 2001. However, it is only two provinces, as far as we are concerned, that have implemented this provision, which is that the NEC must provide for the guidelines that will provide for the establishment, functions, and elections of FCL. Mpumalanga has never done this. The Northwest Province has never done this. I'm not aware of Limpopo having ever done this. We tried our best to even look for PEPs, even for the Western Cape. We're only aware of Northern Cape and Gauteng. But this provision has never been implemented by provinces. This proves that provinces themselves are not implementing the legislation that this parliament passes. So we recommend that this particular function be shifted to the minister, the same way the bill shifts the function of determining the guidelines for the establishment, functions, and elections of SGPs to the minister. Because if we have a uniform system of establishing RCLs in our schools, we will be able to well coordinate how learners are presented in our schools in the country. And even perhaps when Parliament or this portfolio committee needs to consult stakeholders on certain issues, they're able to call RCLs in an organized manner, because there would have been a uniform system for their establishment. So with our recommendation on the wording of the bill as well, or on the wording of this provision, we have provided that the minister must provide for these guidelines within 180 days after the commencement of the bill having been enacted. Because if you just add it there, it will become what will happen will be the same thing that has happened with the current provision, which MECs have not implemented in more than 10 years. Chairperson, our submissions and recommendations have not been fully covered through this oral presentation, but we did, however, provide the full recommendations and submissions to Mr. Brown last week, and I believe that all the members of the portfolio committee have these submissions of ours. And as a movement, it is not our intention to come here and complain. It's not why we are here. We're not here to come and cry to Parliament and say, hey, the minister did not do this. Hey, no. We came here to provide solutions to the problems that are in our basic education system. We came here to provide solutions to the problems that learners are facing on a day-to-day basis. And that is why we have recommended particular wording on certain clauses in the bill. We have recommended the amendment of wording of existing legislation which was not covered by the bill itself. And we hope that this portfolio committee will be able to take this into consideration, will be able to even incorporate this into I don't know if you're still going to have another draft of the bill after this, but to incorporate this into the bill as well. And so that when this bill has to be passed by the National Assembly or even sent to the NCOP, it is a bill that takes into consideration the views and aspirations of the people of this country, and most importantly, the learners, who are the primary stakeholders of this particular sector. It's not parents, it's not teachers, it is not SGPs, it is learners, because the basic education system seeks to serve us, the learners, no one else. Teachers are there to deliver it. SGPs are there to just govern schools. But this is our system, it belongs to the learners. Even those who will come after us, it will still belong to them. And I think it would do justice to the learners if this portfolio committee takes all of these things into consideration. Then just to comment on the criticism on the bill, which we reject, which is that the bill prejudices SGPs by stripping them away of their power. Well, we have noted that a lot of, I know this will provoke some of you, but right-wing civil society movements and political parties that say that the bill strips SGPs of certain powers to determine school policies. Firstly, we need uniformity in our basic education system. We don't need a decentralized basic education system. It will not be well coordinated, and it will further exacerbate inequality. We already have inequality through the establishment of this IEP, because even next year we will have matriculants applying for space in universities. Most universities will start with IEP candidates before they go to these other public schools. So let us make this system one system, not a system determined by whoever wants to do what and how it suits them. We're not saying, though, that the HOD in each province will make correct decisions. And whenever an HOD has made a decision, like there is a school, the school will always have that right to legal recourse in that regard. So, Chairperson, we will support the adoption of the bill by Parliament, subject to the amendments that we have proposed. Thank you.
Thank you very much to the learner command. Members, and then when our time. Anyone who can? Yeah. I hear you like a movie. Okay, now it's time to say to get Sampail and Sandoval and Adwin.
Chair, I think we should say thank you to the young people for bringing such energy to the submission yesterday. I really enjoyed listening to you, more for your energy than anything else. And you did it so well. I think one of the things that really stood out is what you said, that a learner forms an important part of the consultations that need to be had when it comes to decisions that affect it. And certainly in the children's part of the children's rights in legislation, it sets it out like that, that any policy that involves or that affects children, that they should be consulted, any legal framework or anything that affects. Now, I'm very curious to hear. I see that you said you support the merging of schools into one public school. And I'm really curious to hear, because most of the people affected by this, the learners, are your learners that are in rural areas specifically, and where children are taken out and away from their community, and they are placed into township schools, out of farm schools or rural areas and communities that they come from. And we do know that a lot of those learners are actually affected. We have a lot of dropouts, especially in our communities, because children struggle with that. So I would like to hear the South African Learner Command on rural school closure, where farm schools and those schools are being closed. What are your opinion and your view on that? I want to underscore, I'm asking you the question because, like you said, children is a very important stakeholder to that. Then secondly, I also want to ask you the question around, you emphasize the rights of children and the rights of learners to be consulted.
but where does parents fall in? And is it that, do you agree with the move that, you know, that more and more, that the state takes almost the role of the parent instead of the parent taking decisions that affect the lives of their children? If you can, I think I'll stop there for the sake of the chair. But I would love to listen to the scam man more and the patient because it's still alive. But thank you, and thank you for the very respectful manner in which you were engaged with the committee. Which is highly appreciated.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, thank you for the presentation. It was very well prepared for us today, so it's a breath of fresh air after the previous sitters of that exact bench. I've gone onto your website and the account is suspended, so I can't read up more about you. So, I mean, what is your mandate? Where do you come from? So if you can just explain to us, where do you get your mandate from? Because I also see at the end of your presentation there's a big, fat, long list of who must now make up this big body, that's going to be very costly. Then I would just like to know, when would you like to see the full implementation of compulsory grade R, and how do you propose that financial shortfall be addressed or be supplemented? Then the second question is regarding the lifestyle audits. Do you think the department would be able to implement this for all of South African 1,000 schools, and what do you want the time frame for that implementation to be? Thank you, Chair.
Chair, let me join in at least a decent intellectual presenter that didn't stumble over words and obviously was prepared. But I also would like, you've got contradictions in your presentation. I'm going to highlight all of them. But the first thing I want to talk about to you is using the tragic incident of Inyobeni Tavern. Because, you know, not all family members of those let's call victims are always happy that we use them as examples that we have learned over a long time of life. But that didn't happen at a school, and it didn't happen due to a school function where they tried to fundraise. And I'm also adding that, I mean, there was, the youngest were 13 years old in that tragedy. So I think we must be very careful when we come and motivate, is to motivate something. Yes, they were learners, but they did not, it didn't happen because of what is in the bill being proposed. I think we must be fair and honest about that. I also want to say that in one of your discussions about a parent might leave or an adult might leave a can of beer and the child might grab it, we're not selling alcohol during functions where children are present in a room or a wall or a tent. It's under supervision all the time, and there should be accountability, not an open for all, free for all. And I think you must make the differentiation between that. And why? I'm not sure when your organization was established. Maybe if you tell me, I'd better understand. But I said earlier today, I'm not sure if you were sitting here, I think my kids are, I was running a school governing body, a different name then, but it's doing the same job, about 40 years ago. And in those years, we applied for a liquor license for a specific function, and then it's gone. We can't sell any more booze, there can't be booze or alcohol on the premises anymore. So it's not new. So if it's been such a hazard to your organization, why did you wait for the bill to come and complain about it? My other question would be, we do a lot of oversight at this committee, and I've been serving on the education portfolio for many moons. And we've recently been, Chair, as you recall, to Mpumalanga, where we visited and we heard all about the MSC schools. And some schools were really happy because there is a need for it. And there are other schools that weren't consulted, communities weren't consulted maybe, by the provincial department, not the national department. So don't you think, if you're unhappy about that, you should go and talk to your provincial department on this? Because not every school, you know, there's something like pro-choice as well. So if the school right next to me do only present MST, and they specialize in it, and I don't want MST, I'll go to a school who doesn't provide it. That's a choice. It would be a very sad day if we centralize everything in this country, because you can not necessarily uplift quality in everything. You might in fact just do the opposite and take us all down. So centralization is not what everybody agrees on. What we say in decentralizing is it must suit that community, that school community. Because every school has got a community. I also would like to know, and you're not talking about public schools. Now we are really talking about state schools. Private schools versus public schools. And surely you must make that difference. Not all of us went to public schools. Not all of us definitely didn't go to private schools. Doesn't matter what your background is. But I would like to know also, and we must allow that who wants to go or can afford to go, let them go wherever they please. How on earth? Because you said, I think you are angry as well, because some of the words that you use, like vehemently and what stuff, makes me feel that you're angry. You shouldn't be angry. You should contribute in a constructive, positive manner all the time with a great undertone. But how did you get to establish this specific National Basic Education Council with the people you've included here? What motivated those people and not others? Chair, for now, I think that's enough.
Thank you, Chair. I hope I won't take 2 minutes. Thank you very much, Mr. Gudla. Okay, thank you very much for the presentation. But I have 2 questions of clarity. The first one is on the focus groups that you mentioned. I think you mentioned one from Mpumalanga that was converted to the focus school specializing in math and science, and the other one in Valdez Technical School also was converted. I'm sure about the Valdez Technical School that it was not converted. Ever since the early 90s, it has been a technicalized school. It's in the mining area, so it has produced a lot of engineers and artisans in that area. Even today, still continues the same. But my question on that one, I'm from that area, that's why I know. So I wanted to be sure whether you said it was also converted or not. But what also we came across in Mpumalanga when we went for our oversight, I'm not sure if there were members that was with me in there. I think Ntate Mokoasetla was there. There was school that we visited, a very big, school with a very, a lot of, infrastructure, and some of them were still under construction. But at the same time, that school is declining in numbers. The numbers are declining, and very soon, 2 to 3 years down the line, that school will be closed if there are no learners enrolling in that school. So we asked, the school principal to, mobilize communities, and maybe start to recruit more learners, to that school, because it
has a very nice infrastructure. I'm sure we'll look for a name, Mr. Brown. Mr. Brown was there, yeah. So that you as the, you know, young you know, and then young people and learners would also utilize such infrastructure that is there in existence. And it's about, you know, to be closed because there are no learners enrolling, you know, in that school. So I think it's a challenge that some of the schools are being closed because of such, you know, challenges that they are coming across whether by economic activities that are not happening in those areas or anymore, but there is such a challenge that is happening, and maybe we'll need your assistance also to assist such communities to utilize those schools. But on that question of, converting or schools that are, you know, focused, how will the basic education system promote the specialized education in different fields? If you are not going to have focused schools, learners who went to specialized schools perform well in post-schooling, as I've indicated that there are many accidents that were produced in the virus technical school. So what is your view on what must happen now if you say schools now have been converted and there's a lot of learners that move away because of such? And the second one, I would like to know your position or your view or as the South African Learners Command in the situation whereby SGB's admission policies discriminate against other children based on their teaching language or religion, and how should the department intervene in such cases? Thank you very much. Those are my two questions.
Thank you very much.
Well, from my side, I think we must also thank you for your input and the manner in which you have presented them. Now, we do acknowledge that you are a critical part, like you have mentioned. Like, there's nothing that can happen in the sector without the learners. However, we need to be practical in reality. For instance, a learner in a secondary school is someone who is not professional in any field of practice, someone who has never been trained to understand the parameters or the professional roles and the requirements of hiring an educator, because you want to be part of hiring educators. But the reality is someone who's at the high school really does not have an understanding of how you deal with that person. Now, that learner has no privy knowledge of even the Labor Relations Act and the policies governing the appointment of educators. And as the suggestion must form part of the panel, because that's what you want. Now, can you appraise us what would be their role in the recruitment panel of an educator? What do you think they must do? Must they go there to observe? Or do you want them to take part in terms of scoring and so on on the appointment of educators? On the clause 5, section 6, which pertains to the language policy, your submission is recommending that the Parliament should process a bill to amend section 6, subsection 1 of the Constitution to include the South African Sign Language as an official language of the Republic. Now, what are your views with regards to indigenous languages such as your Nama, your Khoisan, and this type of languages? Why are you not incorporating them?
Thank you
And then you are saying that you are objecting to it, and so far it provides the minister with the power to decide who and who not to consult in determining the national care and the national process for the assessment of learner achievement. Now, if this bill is passed here in Parliament, the minister will continue to disregard the existence of learner formation. Are you aware that the department programs, there are programs where the learners in RPLs are orientated to understand their role? Now, you are rejecting clause 12 also of the bill, and you are saying that the issue of forcing learners to take curriculum streams that they do not enjoy through the establishment of technical high schools. And then you've made references to Valref High School and the Konsanga Secondary School. Now, what progress and contribution are you making towards the technical schools user-friendly in terms of the curriculum that is offered there? And what input so far have you made for improvement of learners, particularly in technical math and science? Because you know that in the country we need more learners that are doing math and science. So as the learning command, what is your contribution on this curriculum aspect at the technical school? So I think those will be my questions to yourselves, and I'm allowing you to respond.
Thank you very much, Chatata. When it comes to the effect of measures on learners or school measures on learners, measures are not, you can't have a blanket approach to it, and the manner in which we have put our submissions here is not to say that if there are schools that are far apart in rural Eastern Cape, let's say Mount Frere, for example, then these schools are perhaps 5 kilometers apart and they have low enrollment population, we should match them. No, that's not what we are saying. What we are submitting to this portfolio committee is that we welcome that when schools are matched, they become one new public school, insofar as that the new public school will have its own name upon these two SGPs and these two management structures converging into one. That's what we support. It does not mean that we support learners being disadvantaged. And again, it boils down to the fact that we need to be consulted as learners. And I think the bill does provide for that, that the HOD must provide for the consultation, or the MEC must, the MEC must provide for the consultation of the relevant stakeholders in that particular regard. And it goes back to that. You can't match schools where learners would be disadvantaged or parents would be disadvantaged. So if it would be in the best interest of the children, again, go back to the Constitution of the Republic, which the MEC must follow, because it's the supreme law. Section 2 gives it its supremacy. All law must be consistent with the Constitution. So, and all conduct must also be consistent with the Constitution. That is why sometimes even yourselves as members of Parliament, you would take certain cabinet members to court on what they did and saying that the president was acted unconstitutional and things like that. And it goes back to that. consulted, and the best interest of those learners must be taken into account, and they must be held of paramount importance.
So we're not promoting what you think we are promoting, honorable member. We are just saying that if it is perhaps two schools quite near each other, learner populations are low perhaps, and it wouldn't disadvantage anyone for them to become one school, then let's have that interim SGP, let us have the one school code of conduct, let's have one school uniform, one new school name, and that's a school uniform that everyone must agree to. That's what we are saying. You understand? So, then we go back to, you said, where do parents fall in consultation? Well, parents have always had the louder voice in the past. With respect to the fact that most SGP associations are led by parents, not by educators. Most SGP associations, and I'd like to put emphasis on that, are led by parents. Irrespective of the fact that SGPs consist of learners, parents, educators, and non-teaching staff, but most of these associations are led by parents. And the minister has always consulted SGP associations to proceeding learners. So parents have always been accommodated. And we're not saying that they should be disregarded. We are not coming here with this approach of let us get rid of the parents, let us get rid of other stakeholders and focus only on what learners are saying. These are our parents at the end of the day. Their views are also important. You know, that is why even when a learner is found to have, is even a charge of misconduct in a school, at the SGP disciplinary hearing, the parent must be there to represent his or her own child, or to even just to observe the proceedings. So parents have always been important, and again, most learners are minors, except for those who are in matric and 18, or those who are just 18 but had repeated a grade or few before. But most learners in general are minors, and we all know the status of minors in terms of our law, in that there's always that parental consent that is required in most cases. And that is why even when a learner in other religions and cultures, when a minor wants to get married, there has to be that parental consent as well. So parents will always have their voices heard. Parents will always have a seat at the table in that regard. We are not against parents having their voices heard. But again, learners should be given that participation as well. And Section 10 of the Children's Act provides that children should be allowed to participate in whatever process it is that determines what happens to them or things like that. So again, it all goes to that. We are not saying that learners must be put at the front of the row and anyone else must just be disregarded. Let us all have an equal share of the pie. Let us all have an equal seat at the table. Let no one be undermined because of who they are. That is what we are saying. Quality of these stakeholders, treat them equally, listen to them equally, because they all speak from their perspectives. And if you can't get all of their perspectives, that is why the basic education system is as dysfunctional as it is today. And that is because certain views are not listened to. Certain views are listened to more than other views. So, yeah, then Honorable Fan says, you asked what is our mandate. Apologies about the website. We are having an issue with the service provider. What is our mandate? In essence, you're asking who we are. We are a learners' movement. Our members are learners.
and young people who might not be learners but are interested in the course. And we are particularly, we have one main objective, and that is to fight for the provision of free, quality, well-resourced, and decolonized basic education. That's it. That is who we are. That is our mandate. And then again, when would we like to see grade R or compulsory grade R being implemented? You know, again, Ms. Van Zyl, or Mrs. I'm not sure. Mrs. Van Zyl. Apologies. Mrs. Van Zyl, you know, it goes, I think, again, even if we were to say that we would want to see this implemented now, it doesn't lie with us. Parliament can even pass this bill tomorrow, but again, it will sit on the president's desk, and he's the one who will determine when it comes into operation. But our wish is to ensure that the day that proclamation is signed, the effect would be for the immediate next academic year. And the financial or the financial implications of that, again, that doesn't lie with us. It lies with you. Parliament passes the budget, and then the budget of each department, we don't. So again, if we the people, I want to put emphasis on this, if we the people, our parents elected you here, and even us when we vote in 2024, we will choose who we want to be here, but in essence, we would have voted for you to be here. If we the people want grade R to be compulsory as of tomorrow or as of yesterday, you as Parliament must ensure that that happens, because we are the ones who sent you here. So it is your mandate to listen to us, the people, and ensure that what we, the people, want is implemented as long as it is consistent with the Constitution and all other law in that respect. So the lifestyle audits, and will the DPE be able to implement this at each and every school? You know, we don't have confidence in the, I'm going to state it clearly, frankly so, we don't have confidence in the current administration. We don't have confidence in the current administration, but we can't say that because we don't have confidence in them, we shouldn't say that they should do something. So if they do, if they fail to do it, then let us deal with it when we get there. If it means that we file some court application, let's do it. Because we have all of these three arms of state working hand in glove together and working so well, and we must use each and every one of them. So if we come to Parliament and Parliament listens to us, but the executive fails to implement, we must go to the judiciary and say, hey, Parliament said executive must do this, and laws say that it is consistent with the Constitution. Please mandate them to do it, in a sense, and then they do it. Or if perhaps we have a problem with the executive and we come to you and we say, hey, hold these people accountable, you must do that. You must be assisting us, the stakeholders. But your responsibility is to make laws. It is to represent us. Yeah, those are two main mandates, or your authorities, legislative and the representative mandate. So if you use it well, and hopefully they will get it right, and the judiciary works well for us as well, then I think we will all be happy. But when else, we can't be saying that because the current minister, it took her 13 years to table this bill, it will take her 13 years to implement lifestyle audits, then we mustn't have this thing. Are we really assisting ourselves? So let's make the laws. She won't be minister forever, even so. So, yeah.
No, forever in the sense of not in that sense. But we don't live forever. We won't be here forever. Even yourselves, you won't be here forever. Someday, some of us will have to come here and do this particular job that you are doing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then, I think you misunderstood me. I think it's Ms. van der Walt. On the Enyobeni tragedy, I was not saying that it was a school function or that it was a fundraising function. What I'm saying is this is the extent of damage alcohol has done on our society. And let's look at, I'm not sure where you reside, but I'm aware you do oversight, and you've done that for years. And I don't know if I should continue or... No, but I even though I can't see you anymore, but I think you've been to rural communities, you've been to townships. Oh, Limpopo. Yeah, you see, you've been to quite a rural province. I've only been to that province once in my entire life. But I wasn't in an urban area. My grandmother lives in a rural village in Mpumalanga. I grew up in a township, Mamelodi. And I've seen what alcohol does to our people. It might not be, please don't get me wrong, it might not be what you might experience or what you might have experienced in while growing up, but you know, we have been subjected for years, in fact centuries, to abject poverty, and I would like to call it man-made poverty, because we did not choose to be poor. We did not choose to be subjected to the degradation that we were subjected to in the past. And that has caused us to be what we are today. The angry population. The angry black people of this country. Mm. We're not angry because we like being angry.
Mm.
We're angry because those who came before us, they fought so hard. The likes of Stephen Bantu Biko, the likes of Robert Mangaliso Sobukwe, the likes of Winnie Madikizela Mandela, they fought so hard for me to sit here and participate like this, in this type of era. And again, we have the issues that we're having today, issues that should have been resolved years ago. So that is where we are coming from. People are unemployed. They see alcohol as an escape, because whenever they're intoxicated, they feel better. Yes, it's not a good thing, but it's the reality. So if a child is exposed to this at home, and then a child must see this happening on the school premises, even from afar, even if they're not there, but must see, or perhaps on the Monday, there's a beer bottle that was never disposed of. There's a beer bottle on the school premises. Maybe not alcohol is not such a bad thing. We have normalized alcohol, you know. And it's not taking us anywhere. We had lockdown, we survived. We're still alive, we're here. You understand? So, alcohol won't die if we don't have alcohol. Even after that fundraising function, you can still go to a bar, you can still go to a restaurant and have a glass of wine. You can still go to the
the vineyards and do some wine tasting. You can still go to Spanioni's place and have a nice bottle of beer. So you can survive. We have the current World Cup that's happening there in Qatar. Personally, I don't support some of the restrictions, but that one of alcohol, I support it. You can still have fun without alcohol. Mm. And there are other ways to raise funds without selling alcohol. Mm. Many other ways. If you go to universities and you look at certain student societies, you will see that there are many different ways of raising funds. So let us learn from each other. Let us not limit ourselves to selling something to raise funds. There are many other ways. And again, I'm not here to dictate what those ways are. So we must have creative minds in our schools who will determine how to raise funds. And again, the state should also lend a helping hand. Schools are underfunded. The funding they receive is not enough. And I think Parliament, through various means, should try and ensure that it raises funds. If it means that we automate income tax, this is a suggestion. I know it's not your prerogative, but if it means that income tax must be an automatic thing, like VAT, let us do that, because people are avoiding paying tax. People are not paying taxes, people are owing staff a lot of money. I'm not going to mention names. So let us, we have to come up with solutions. And as Parliament, you also have to come up with solutions. You can't always be the ones with questions, especially to ask the people who expect you to have answers. Then you say that there are some communities that are happy with MST. Yes, in some cases, you know, there will be communities that are like, yeah, Tonamu is science, you know, Tonamu is math, in a sense. But again, as a parent, you might be happy to see your child do physical sciences, or do mathematics, or technical sciences, or technical mathematics. You know, you didn't speak well, you need to be happy sometimes, but again, is the child happy? If the child is happy, then it's fine. But let us think for the future as well. Will those that come after them want to do the same? And if there's only one school in a particular area, and I made mention of one fact, because that's where I'm matriculated. My group was the last group to do economics, business studies, and accounting. As a stream. We were the last group. Right now, if you're a learner there, you're doing either physical sciences or life sciences, and you only have a choice between geography and accounting. So it doesn't really do justice if you live next to the school. And you can't say, again, if you want to travel to, if you want another stream, you can travel to, you can just go to the other stream with a choice. No, it's not a choice. These people are poor. They don't have that luxury of having 16 rand for a taxi every day. Most of these people don't have that luxury. And you can't expect a learner to walk 45 minutes to school every morning, 45 minutes back home. You are straining the learner. We don't even have a digitized education. So they are carrying heavy bags full of books. Walking such long distances, not to mention the distances that I walked in, certain work on these pieces of people, let us have to cross rivers barefoot, becomes a problem. So let's have enough schools first, then we can talk about competing. And on the issue of virus, there are subjects that were phased out, and that was my concern. Our Secretary General, Lutando Data, was a learner in that school. And we always had a problem with that school, especially the current principal.
but that's a story for another day. Stuff has to phase out. And yes, you are a producing engineer, but does everyone want to be an engineer? We can't all be engineers. Let us face that. What about that learner who wants to do something else? What about that learner who wants to be an actor? These are things we don't talk about a lot. What about that learner who wants to be a musician? What about that learner who wants to be a sound engineer working at the SABC? Technical subjects don't give them that path. They don't push them there. Certain universities, certain TVET colleges have requirements on what subjects you should have done in high school for you to do a particular program. Especially those who want to do music. Know you have some strict requirements, especially University of Pretoria. So it's such things that we should look at. Let's have enough schools first. Then we can come back and talk a bit. But for now, we don't support it. We believe it should be removed. We're not ready for it as a country. We don't have enough schools. Perhaps, I don't know who's going to take government in 2024. But whoever does, if they're able to give us enough schools, then we can come back and amend again. Not that we amend now and then we can only amend after 15 years. No, we can even amend again next year. It's not a problem. So we can come back again. Hopefully you'll pay for our flight tickets again. So, I'm taking too much time. Numbers declining in Mpumalanga at a school. Yeah, it's a serious concern. Serious concern, and I think it goes back to some of the public proposals and recommendations or opinions that perhaps we should make higher education compulsory or something. Or make it all goes back to that. But, you know, maybe we should relook exit age and all of those things. But in my opinion, I think we should stop looking at principals and teachers and saying you guys must call these learners and these parents. Why not you as parents go to a community hall? We will come also. Don't worry. We go to community hall, we call all community members, even those who don't have learners in the school. Call all of them and ask them, what's wrong? What's happening? There's also a school in, make reference to Cullinan, now Cullinan Secondary School. It used to be combined school when I was attending. When there were allegations against the principal, against misuse of school funds, corruption, and all of those things, a lot of learners started leaving. The NEC came, who is now the premier of that province, Honorable Lesufi. He came to the school, you know. We raised our grievances ourselves as learners as well to the president of the RCF. Not to say that they were addressed, they were never addressed. We listened to input, but nothing really ever happened because we kept on seeing learners leaving the school. We kept on, even now, most of the people that I attended school there with, they didn't matriculate at that school. It's issues like that. I think communities need to be consulted in a broader sense. There's a school in where my grandmother lives. It's very close to where my grandmother lives. When I started living with her in 2018, I could have went to that school, but my father decided to take me to Wamhla. Yes, my father could have afforded to take me there because I paid for the taxes, but there were those who couldn't, obviously. That school, people don't like it. I have neighbors, their children don't go to that school. In other words, the education is of good quality.
Yeah.
So why not consult these communities, hear from them, what's wrong, what's happening? We have been serious in maternal and secondary school. High rate. Here, Lena was stepped dead another year by another Lena. Let's talk to communities. We're not talking to communities. As we do oversight, yes, but you call community meetings. So, let's call more community meetings, let us visit more schools, and invite us, you will come.
Yeah.
You will be there. Discriminatory admission policies, we are against that. We don't believe that a admission policy should contravene Section 9 of the Constitution. And that is why we believe that right, that function should be centralized. Not to say that an HOD should determine what the language policy is, but obviously the procedure is that SGP must submit it to the HOD. HOD must go through it, see if it is in line with whatever is happening in that community, and do what is right. If that those who are aggrieved, our courts are always accessible. And again, we even have parliament, which are legislatures as well, where they can go and raise their concerns. So it's not a big issue for us, but we are against that thing of admission policy, discriminatory admission policy. What is the role of learners in recruitment panels? What we are saying is that learners should be learners in SGPs. They have to be members, correct? So they should be trained as SGP members to fulfill their responsibilities as SGP members, like members of parliament are inducted. There are some members of parliament, I'm sure in 1994 you guys had an issue where none of you had ever been in parliament, talking about the ANC and those who were not part of parliament before. There were those who had never been exposed to this type of setting, and those who never knew how to analyze a bill. How were they inducted? So is it difficult to do the same with a learner? And I think, Chairperson, you shouldn't undermine secondary school learners. And I'm saying that because I'm living proof. I knew that Section 10 of the South Kent School that prohibits corporal punishment when I was in grade 8. Not now when I joined SAOC, it was even before SAOC. So we shouldn't say that they are children. Don't undermine them to that extent. They can read and write, and most can read to comprehend. And again, learners can elect from amongst themselves those of high caliber, those of high intellect, to be able to fulfill such functions. Statutory functions, if I might add, that are articulated accordingly in legislation such as the Second Schools Act. Indigenous languages, we are not against indigenous languages being recognized. The only reason why we did not include that particular aspect into our recommendations, into our submissions, was of one reason. I hope I'm not misinterpreted. We are having an issue where even with some of the recognized or official languages, where these languages are not properly documented, if I can put it in that sense, we don't have, for example, it's in the web. There are certain words where we don't have a word for certain things. We borrow some words here and there. So we haven't done this session in indigenous language. We're not going to come here and lie and say that we have done our research, but who are we to speak on behalf of the indigenous people? And I believe that through the National House of Traditional Leaders and Khoisan Leaders, you would be able to receive some proper input in that regard on a future methodology. And going back to language policies again, you know, it's a good idea to have learners write mathematics in isiZulu. It's a good idea. But what kind of idea is it if they're going to do whatever they're going to do in English University or the teacher's college? So I think in the portfolio committee, you should at some point have a joint meeting with that other committee on higher education and try and ensure that the legislation in these two sectors are aligned. So that the day we have IMBA as a subject, in other words, mathematics, and this is whether we are able to ensure that we have students in universities doing political sciences in their mother tongue, like in other countries. So we're not against that as well, by the way. It's just that we're having this difficulty, that there's no proper coordination in government, and the parliament again, you just need to pull up your socks here and there. In essence, I think I've covered all questions. I'm not saying any clarity.
I have a quick follow-up. Basically saying that the partnership that they changed between the community level, HGB level, and then they are given to students. But yet you, in your presentation, say that the department is the one to make the final decision on policy, on admission. So I'm just wondering if you actually teach with that, because you want to empower the HGB the one end, but then you disempower the policy. Thank you, Jennifer.
Disempowering anyone and not empowering anyone. By shifting certain functions to the department, we are seeing one of the quality. And I would like to put emphasis on that. On the issue of SGPs not being consulted, they should be consulted. That's why we are saying that we will support the uniformity. As long as there's consultation. And if the final decision is in accordance with that consultation, then it's fine. If it's not, then we should, our costs should be easily accessible. And if there are high legal costs and things like that, I heard earlier on someone speaking about an ombuds person for the sector, that's also a good idea. That's an ombuds person. Hopefully it will be effective and will be a resource enough to handle complaints speedily so. Because we're having an issue with South African Human Rights Commission itself. Under resource, you will submit a complaint today. By the time you've forgiven those people, only then they come with a response. So, you're not disempowering anyone, you're not empowering anyone. You want uniformity, and you want everyone to be consulted. If it means that the HOD herself or himself must go to the school, then so be it, it's their job. I'm 19 years old.
Oh my word.
Yeah, you know. So we don't allow individuals. So it's a school that joins. So